Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear radio program. I am your host, Susan Larison-Dance, and today I am welcoming on the program Rachel Zuzis, who is a spiritual counselor and healer who uses numerology and sacred geometry united in her work. And so I'm really looking forward to talking with Rachel today. Today we do have a call-in number for anyone who would like to call in with questions for Rachel. That number is 310-807-5104. And then we also have an open chat room today, and we always on this program welcome questions and comments from the chat, and I do incorporate them into the show. So if you would like to come into the chat room, you do need to have a login on Blog Talk Radio, which is quite easy to obtain. You can then contribute to the chat and be a part of our conversation today. Rachel is a Portland, Oregon spiritual teacher, just like me, and I'm really happy to welcome her here today. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
Well, I know that you're doing a lot of things in the Portland area, in addition to your own work as a spiritual counselor, also facilitating a healing arts fair that's becoming a regular occurrence in Portland, which I think is a great addition to the spiritual community here.
Yeah, there's so much activity in that arena in Portland, and so many practitioners offering their own flavor, you know, of healing and counseling. And so it's great to get everybody together in a room every once in a while so you can explore and share.
Well, you know, I think the synergy of more and more of us getting together, whether we're there to speak or have a booth or just to attend, I think there is so much power. You know, it occurs online as well. And I know that, you know, there are people listening from all over the place, but I know we also have people in Portland. And, you know, honestly, wherever you are, I would hope there are opportunities for people to get together, even in small groups or in larger gatherings with others in the spiritual community, because I have benefited so much from that, both in learning and in my own development. It's been so powerful for me, and so I'm really looking forward to your event.
I have the same experience, and that's why I started it, is because I just love being in those spaces where there's this beautiful synergy of everybody coming together, and it magnifies all of what we're bringing to it. So it's always exciting and fun and beneficial to be there.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I figured I should mention right off is your website, because some of the things we're going to be talking about, it might actually be helpful for people to go on to your website, because there are some rather interesting geometric figures on your website that I have some questions about and I'd like you to talk about. And we'll do our best on the radio, but I could see how some might benefit from also going to your site and following along a little bit. And your site, and I'll type this in the chat room in a moment, is divinetemplatecreations.com. That's all together, divinetemplatecreations.com. And I will say, Rachel, looking into your work, something you may not know about me is that I actually have a scientific background and a math degree. When I was younger, that was the field that I pursued. And back then, I wanted to be a computer scientist, And to do that, I needed to get a math degree, which of course involved a lot of geometry, and both 2D and 3D. And then over time, I actually, when I got my master's degree in computer science, I specialized in computer graphics, which of course had a lot of geometry involved. And my thesis was based on generating geometric figures automatically. It was a, and so you may not realize that I have an interesting link to this topic, and an interesting path I've come down, where I'm finding many of the things that came to me early in life, I'm now able to combine with spirituality later in life. And it's just, I'm sure there is a geometric metaphor for that happening in so many of our lives, where it comes together in a beautiful picture.
Yeah. I always loved math. It was my favorite subject in school. I even took calculus twice just because I could. And because there was something really compelling about playing with the numbers and the patterns. And, when we get into this sacred geometry, it's talking about how those numbers reveal something deeper, something hidden in reality, and how it shapes itself. And so it does have this really compelling link with science and, natural science, looking at the world, and theoretical science, trying to figure out how it functions. And this is a spiritual insight into what might be some of the mechanisms behind how the world comes to be as it is.
It's funny, when I was, especially in college, over and over and over, it seemed like almost every homework assignment involved the Fibonacci sequence. And I remember getting tired of it. It's like, not the Fibonacci's again, because it seemed like we were constantly using it. And yet at the time, I had absolutely no idea how significant that sequence is to the structure of things in the universe. And I have to tell you, it's only within, I would say, the last couple years that I began to read about how that shows up all over the place. And I was wondering, I know that you do talk about that a little bit on your website, and that might be something you could talk about a little bit now, as to, there are these patterns in the universe that profoundly show to us the spirituality of all that is, that we are not alone. That's what I feel. I mean, it just can't be coincidental. And the Fibonacci sequence and the Fibonacci structure that's out there is something that just shouts to us, I am. I mean, that's what I hear when I see it, that we are not alone.
Yes, it's hard to escape the Fibonacci sequence. It really is the root of everything. And but it's very simple. It's just the idea of starting at the beginning and watching how things grow as they build on each other, kind of multiply. So it's an expression of the natural way that things grow, expand, get bigger. And what happens is, mathematically with the numbers, is you start at the beginning at zero or at one. Zero and one, we can talk about that too, have an interesting relationship where they kind of flip back and forth to each other. But starting with the zero and the one, if that's what you have, the all and the nothing, the particle and the wave, they're flipping back and forth from potential to being. And you say, well, if those combine, what is the next thing that they will create? So you add the zero and the one, and you get a one. If you have that one that you started with, and the new one, and you add those together, you get two. And then you take the previous one and the two, add them together, you get three. And so the sequence builds as you add the new number to the number behind it. And so I think that what it's hinting at is that what is created, what is potential, is contained in the thing that already is. So I think that's a really powerful metaphor for ourselves. In all we need is right here within ourselves. It is the source of the next thing that we can create. We just build on what is already there.
I've heard it often expressed, especially lately, how the concept of the hologram and how the whole is contained in the parts. And it seems like what you're talking about here is very similar to that. And it has such a profound spiritual meaning in that, you know, all that is, the creator, however you choose to label it, is in all the parts too. And that creative force is there, that creative potential.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that is a commonly known image for the Fibonacci sequence is that spiral, you know, that we see in the nautilus shell and in sunflowers. If you look at the head of a sunflower, the way that the petals and the seeds wrap around each other, they create this spiral pattern. And that all contains that patterning of the Fibonacci numbers. And that shape, it's a fractal shape. It's what's special about that particular spiral is that if you focus in on one section of it, it'll be the same as the bigger section of
it.
So you can still keep just like winding in on itself into infinity. It never ends. It never runs into itself or expires. So it's a really, really amazing metaphor for that. Connectedness of everything and how, every particle contains all the information, all the potential of the whole universe in it.
You know, it seems like there are just so many clues to unraveling the mysteries of the universe. And I know you talk about that, how we can really see into the true nature of the universe through geometry, through numbers, that it provides a clue. You know, many years ago, I read the book Contact by Carl Sagan, and it's not really in the movie, but in the book he talks about there being this embedded clue everywhere, which in that book it's the number pi is embedded in a lot of things. And it like just shouts out that there is design. I mean, that this is not random. This is not due to any kind of even, you know, often an evolutionist. I actually believe in evolution. Just I believe in guided evolution in which there can be quantum leaps. But many of the processes of evolution, I think, are part of the natural processes that have been placed on the earth. And then there's also consciousness evolution as well, which so often, you know, people just talk about physicality. They don't talk about consciousness. But I feel like there are these clues that, and if people go to your website, they can see that. And it's a tremendous reassurance to those of us who may at one point have doubted. I mean, so many of us on our journeys have doubted and have gone through difficult times when you feel alone. And I think there are clues out there to help us. I mean, there's all kinds of assistance as well, but sometimes, you know, those of us especially who come from that scientific background, we're always looking for proof. We're always looking for evidence. And I've certainly been that kind of person in my life. And that's what I love about this is it's evidence right in front of your eyes of design.
Yeah, and one thing I love about this is that the root of this knowledge that's come to be known as sacred geometry comes from ancient scientists and mathematicians. And, you know, at that point, religion and science was integrated. It was all studying the world around us was a study of creation, of the divine, you know, however they conceptualized it at that point, that they saw that was the access point. And so, you know, how amazing that is that we can just look right out the window at what's in front of us, at ourselves, at the world around us. It's all an expression of that, and we can find it tangibly. And I agree. I think that's really, that can bring a lot of solace at times when you might feel a little lost in things. There's so much that is a mystery, but if we get tiny little glimpses that there's reason and order in it, that can be really helpful.
You know, I think so often there's a tendency to characterize the knowledge and understanding of ancient cultures, especially indigenous cultures, as somehow inferior and, you know, not as developed. And there may be some things that our society has developed that they didn't have. But one of the things that we have really suffered from, and I'm sure there's always a reason, there's a reason for everything, but it's that conflict, the artificial conflict that was set up between religion and science because of the hostility towards, actually it can go both ways, especially now. There can be hostility from the scientific community towards anything that's remotely spiritual, even today. And then, of course, we all know what happened to people in the Middle Ages who were scientists, who were revealing things that didn't correspond to the dogma of the day. And so we've really lost something, and yet I feel that we're regaining it in the spiritual community. And there are many people who've never lost it, many cultures who have never really lost that understanding. I was reading about the Native Americans not too long ago, and how I was just at a Native American exhibit. Everything they observed, spirit was a part of it. And that can be true of science. There is no reason, and people certainly are discovering this now with movies like What the Bleep Do We Know, and so many scientists awakening and integrating and trying to understand things they can't understand unless they integrate spirituality, consciousness, and science. And it's all truth. I mean, in the end, they're not in conflict. It's just the nature of what is real.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And I've been a spiritual seeker all my life. It's always been a focus for me. And I, except for rare moments, I've always felt very, very strongly the conviction that there's more to what we see right in front of us. And I searched through a lot of traditions, and I respect all the different religious traditions that there are out there, and they hold elements of truth, and they speak to people in different ways. But for me, what finally really grabbed me, or at least up to this point, is this area of study where we get to see it right in front of us. That's so compelling to connect with it that directly.
Well, I think when the evidence is right in front of you, and that was certainly the case for me too, it does. You do then realize, hey, I know this is out there. I mean, there's that certainty that then leads to higher spiritual experiences because you don't need to doubt anymore. And, you know, my own path, I'd have to say, I don't think I ever contemplated being an atheist or an agnostic. I never doubted that much. I more doubted about the nature of God because I came from a very conservative path and it didn't resonate. And for so many years, I struggled with it not resonating and yet trying to integrate it. And, you know, now I can look back and see that there were many very loving, positive things that came through that. But, you know, and I needed to actually go down that path where I was fearful of some things even in order to really be free. It's all part of my path. But I have to say that what reassured me the most was beginning to see evidence of different things. And it also makes you want to share. And so I can see why you do what you do, because you're really helping people. There are people, definitely, I talk to them all the time, who have either been taught a religious path that didn't work for them and then they just rejected it all. That is very common. and then have become atheists or agnostics, or they're rationalists, and but yet they wish there was something more, which is so fascinating, because when you study some of the big atheists and agnostics out there, you can even read in their words that they're open to other things. They really are. It's just they haven't seen the evidence. So I think, Rachel, that your work can really help people in that it is something concrete that people can really look at. And if they have any understanding of statistics, they can look at this and say, how could it be? You know, what is the statistical likelihood, for example, of the presence of the Fibonacci spiral and the sequence everywhere? What is the statistical likelihood? And it's really very unlikely. And so I think that that's helpful to people who are seeking a higher path and yet don't even know how to find it and yet are open to it, if they can at least find a gateway to it.
Yeah, and the other side of this for me is, you know, what's so amazing about this time and in the new age, you know, I put it in quotes, is that we are, spirituality is growing to this place where more and more people see it in themselves, that it's not about God who's out there somewhere
right.
else. And so, you know, how do you, like, find this in yourself and know that you have a divine essence yourself? And so it's in looking in the world around us, but it's also realizing that these patterns are in us, and this is how we are divine creative beings that are here to experience and see what the possibilities are. And I love that. I think it's really empowering, and it brings us back to that really important understanding of our true nature. We can capitalize on that.
It's so interesting how in these major religions, there's often the teaching of God being omnipresent, meaning God everywhere, and yet people forget that's also in you.
Mm-hmm.
And they externalize God. And, you know, that's what I love about When I study the integrated whole, or it continues to integrate, I'm a work in progress here, as we all are. It's fascinating how the truth was there all along, and how I can find a lot of verses from when I was young that I don't remember seeing or studying or thinking about at the time, yet express some very compatible truths with other paths. And you can begin to see the commonality, and it's no longer threatening. Some people view it as threatening to think that God is within you, that that's some kind of challenge to an external God. And yet, if you only talk about it in the way, but wait a second, don't you believe God is omnipresent? And then they say yes, then you say, well, what do you think that means? And when you think about it, you realize that it's a natural thing, and that God, Spirit, the Creator, I mean, there's so many different ways of labeling it, is in all things, and most importantly in us, because that's where the co-creative potential is. Now, something I wanted to ask you about on this topic is, I know that for you, sacred geometry and numerology, which we can talk some about that too and follow up to our last show, I welcome discussion of that as well, as we're all learning, and each conversation we're having on this show is a continuation of the series. So what I'd like you to talk about a little bit, Rachel, is how these things, they're not abstract at all. They are highly personal, and how you're able to utilize this even in healing and helping people with personal growth, how people can utilize these concepts in a very approachable, personal way.
Well, the focus of my work with people is creating personal mandalas. So that's a process that integrates numerology and sacred geometry and their own creative expression. So they get to see, you know, what their potential is right there as it appears as they're drawing these designs. And that can relate very personally by, like, as they talked about in the last show, you know, you do your personal numbers, you learn that there's certain numbers that are strongly associated with you. And sacred geometry then is the visual expression of those numbers. It's this process, you know, we talk about that it's patterning, it's the order of the universe and how things come into shape. It literally is that the triangle, the square, the pentagon, all these different forms are reflections of different aspects, different types of energy as they come into shape in different ways and give us the whole variety of things that we see in front of us. But the basic numbers, the 1 through 9, they connect with principles within ourselves, and then that's a way to look at those and work with them right in front of you. And so, you know, so I teach the process of how to create different designs that represent, that literally embody a certain number. But then there is a infinite number of expressions of that number based on the basic pattern. And so the most exciting thing is when I do a class that we focus on a particular number instead of people doing different ones for themselves, and to see what the variety of things that people come up with by the end of the class, all starting from the same basic shape. And then they can just play with lines and curves and go all different directions in it and colors. And it's really lovely. And I think the healing part of that is, number one, that it's just, it's a very grounding meditative process. You get to sit and focus on something for that time, which really is all that we need. But it's, these numbers, these energies, they have meaning and influence on us, and so it's a way of connecting with them and bringing certain energies into your life just by drawing, by then viewing that design in the future. So,
yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
It does. And, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about how to many of us, you know, the concept of a mandala may seem like something we haven't explored, and yet the fascinating thing is if you really think about it, they've probably been around you forever. Because I was thinking about, just now, as a child, when you started talking about drawing them out, all of a sudden I was brought back to my childhood and how much I loved spirographs. I absolutely loved spirographs. And, you know, even later when I pursued computer science, one of my master's projects was to do an automated spirograph and how, you know, even on the screen. but especially as a child, I am brought back to how frequently, and it wasn't just me, we all loved them. We loved, and you know, I bet our parents loved them too, because when we were working with the spirographs, we were probably calm and quiet. There was something very engaging to it. And I'll tell you, I was a very active child, so I'm sure I was handed the spirograph often.
there's something truly magical about watching those patterns emerge. You know, I give people a compass. They work with simply a compass and a ruler. And you start with a circle, and then there's different ways to mark out, you know, either 4 points on the circle, evenly spaced, or 5 points, or 6. And then from those points, you can take the ruler and draw lots of lines that connect them, or take the compass and draw different arcs that connect the dots in different ways. And it is like the spirograph. You see like this flow of how it spirals around the circle and starts to build this pattern. And it's magic. It is. There you go. You get to see magic right in front of you.
It is magic. And, you know, as we're talking, I'm thinking here, and I don't know if you've ever explored this or if it's something anyone else you know is exploring, but I wonder, as a parent, and I like to think of myself as a conscious parent as much as I can be conscious. We're all, it's a process, being a conscious parent. I'm thinking about, wow, you know, there could be some real value, and I'm sure this is being used somewhere, to engaging children consciously in these sacred geometry processes. And you know, we did it in a way unconsciously when we were children. And I wonder if anyone's ever explored that, even for say, hyperactive children, or, you know, a kind of art therapy, only it's sacred geometry therapy for all ages. Have you ever thought about that, Rachel?
All the time. Because think of how many kids hate math class. It's
boring.
They don't get it. And how many more would I think would be really interested to have the numbers introduced to them in this way, with, you know,
yes,
drawing the designs of them, but also just learning about what the meaning of them is and how you can see them expressed in plants and, you know, different shapes all around you in the world. And it brings the numbers alive and makes them relevant. It's not just calculating, you know, commercial transactions and things like that. So,
I was just going to say, I know that some of the newer math classes, just having observed, they do incorporate more real-world elements than when I was young. But, you know, you really have me thinking about how that could be taken even farther, that there really is a link. Math, I don't know why so much in our society we try to steer people into paths, and this is so true. It's even more true now in some ways where, you know, even as you're just starting in junior high or middle school, they start labeling kids as, you know, the engineering path or you know, the humanities path. And yet the fascinating thing about this is we need more people who can integrate multiple paths and not be pigeonholed on a very dry, which sometimes engineering, which I've been exposed to so much in my life, not, you know, even professionally for many years, it can be very dry. And yet the fascinating thing about it is that if you can integrate it with other disciplines, that's when it becomes powerful. That's when you can really begin to create things. And I think as parents and as adults, as teachers, we can all be conscious of these things not being at odds with one another, that it's the integration that has the true power.
Yeah, and I think there are, you know, like I think at Waldorf schools, they're very good about teaching, you know, curriculums that integrate all different topics at the same time. And I know they do a bit with sacred geometry. And so there's some, you know, alternative schools that are starting to step that way. But, yeah, how exciting to think about it moving into public schools and just, you know, the wider consciousness about what kids could learn about to prepare themselves for life in the world.
It's true. And, you know, one of the things earlier in life, which was a passion of mine, and I suppose I shouldn't let it go, is the fact that so few women go into engineering. I was one of the very few women computer scientists, especially going for a master's degree. And really throughout my professional career, there were not very many women. And it's because somehow they do, I think, view this as very dry and that there's not an artistic, fluid element to math or to science science is a little different, but to especially engineering disciplines. And yet the fascinating thing is that we all have so much we could bring to this. It is so sad to me that profession is missing out on so many people who could bring really valuable contributions. Even in the terms of, you know, they say that there are some differences between the sexes in terms of left brain, right brain, and all that. I don't know. I mean, I think there's all kinds of variation, but how powerful it is to be able to combine right brain and left brain and just bring all those elements together. And I think if we made math and these pursuits more approachable, more meaningful, more fluid, we would get many more creative people of both sexes coming into these fields and truly advancing us in remarkable ways.
Absolutely. And what's really interesting about sacred geometry itself, the discipline of it, is as I've gotten into it, I started to notice that most things that are written about sacred geometry over the years have been done by men. There's very few women who seem to have gone into that study, and I think that that does stem from, you know, already culturally men are pushed more towards the science and the math, and but unfortunately I think it does create a way in which sacred geometry itself is communicated in a certain way. And so we miss out maybe on some of other aspects of how we can work with it and understand it. And so I had the benefit of being introduced to sacred geometry by a woman who actually was also a numerologist, and she, you know, she taught me this practice of integrating them. And I think it takes it in a whole different way of interacting with the knowledge and the teaching. So it's not just an intellectual exercise. You get this experiential, creative way to work with it.
Yes.
And I think that's really valuable.
Yes, definitely. It leads to much greater creative potential, I think, when you're integrating everything. I had someone message me, and just in a general term, a listener, wanted to have you address this, if you can. If someone's going through a challenging experience and a challenging time, how can sacred geometry and numerology and the various practices that you're engaged in, how can that help with the healing? With, I know we've already talked a little bit about the meditative aspects of using mandalas, and I was just wondering if maybe, without going into detail, the particular difficulty that this person is having, just a challenge that suddenly occurred, how does that help us cope? How does that help us move on? And this person's trying to be positive and looking forward through this experience. Could you help us with that?
Sure. I think there's a couple parts of it. The most fundamental is just that getting to touch back with the order and the patterning of the universe, that and that we're part of something greater, so that even in the midst of a moment of crisis, we can connect back into the greater and all the different potentials of what life can be. But I also think that the just like playing with these concepts, the drawing itself, all the ways that it, the way I understand numbers, what they mean is that they are communicating to us different aspects of creation. So that's number one, the big creation that we're all a part of, and how that comes to be, how the one multiplies and becomes these various aspects of itself, but also how we are creators and how we embody those numbers and those energies and potentials within ourselves. And
yes,
I think the practice of exploring our creativity is not only in creating pieces of art and drawings, it's in getting in touch with our creative potential, our ability to see possibilities and new ideas, so that we can move through times when we're struggling with that to see where we want to go and how we can make it happen, and know that we have the power to make that happen, to get where we want to go.
Yeah, I think there are many tools that we overlook. I know my own experience when I've gone through struggles like, we've all had them. I mean, and we've all, actually today, it's been really relevant, thinking about September 11th, for example, coming up. I was just listening to a radio program where they were replaying the trauma of that day, and it brings some of it back, you know, when you think about where you were. And there are a lot of people out there, I think, today and over the weekend. I know people listen to this show a lot in the archives when they have time over the weekend. And I'm sure even more so over the weekend, we're going to be hearing reminders, chilling reminders of what happened on that day, no matter how people interpret it. I know there's a lot of controversy about there in some circles as to what it meant or anything. It's just the fundamental trauma of that day is coming back to us in a very real way. And how now, 10 years from now, can we deal with it again in a more positive way? Can we reflect upon where we were 10 years ago and where we are now, and how now we are going to move forward and deal with this trauma that's still probably in each of us to some degree? And I was wondering if you could reflect on that, Rachel, because I know for a fact that many people listening to this show are going to be thinking about that this weekend. So I would be curious what you would recommend. What would help us? What would help us to work through any remnants that we have from that day? And remember, some people have very personal things that have happened. They've lost loved ones in the ensuing wars, or even on that day, there are probably people who are listening to this who know someone who was lost, and so they're revisiting that. I was wondering if you could help us all with that, Rachel, and what would you suggest we do, even as an exercise, if we're feeling some pain from that?
Well, let's see. What comes to mind is that, for me, sacred geometry is about the beauty of the world. You know, going back to the Fibonacci numbers and the spirals and that pattern, that one of the most common expressions of that is in plants. In flowers, they tend to be five-sided. And the five in particular, it has that same ratio in it that the Fibonacci does, and so that's connecting back to that growth and potential. And flowers are so beautiful, and you know, another name for that spiral is the golden mean or the golden ratio, and.
Oh, yeah.
That has been known through time to be, people say that is the kind of the key to beauty. Like, you know, what does that mean? How it could be that there's this formula for beauty, but that you see cross-culturally and in, you know, in expressions of how plants form themselves and how shells form, that there's something about that particular proportion that is harmonious,
yes.
in a really special way, and I think it gets back to that all the parts contain the potential of the next, and so you have this relationship with the larger containing the smaller pieces that made it, and so that there's, to me, that's the essence of the beauty and the connection between everything. And
yeah.
For me, that is my personal tactic for pulling myself out of those moments when I start to get caught in doubt and pain. And, I mean, that's there. I think there's an element of beauty in that, too. That's just part of the expression of all the ways, all the potentials of being. You know, I think what this all is about is it's spirit trying to see what is possible. That
yes.
It's one of the things that sacred geometry teaches, that it all started from the nothingness of the kernel, the one point. And then, you know, we know it in science as the Big Bang. And I think that matches with the metaphor that the one, that kernel of potential of everything, of spirit in its oneness, it it's very nice to be in your oneness and you're there and you're all contained, but it's not very exciting because you don't get to see anything or do anything. And so all this, I think, is about that movement out to see what is possible, all potential experiences and ways to be in the world. And so there's absolutely nothing wrong with any of these different experiences, even if some of them bring pain. And so I go back to that that's what this all is about, is exploring the potential, the ones even that are that bittersweet, you know, beauty and pain of being alive.
Yes. I wanted to mention we have a caller out there, area code 229. I'm going to bring you on in just a second. I just wanted to make one more comment on what you just said, Rachel. You know, as you were talking about how all these experiences in our lives, either as a society and personally, of course, societal experiences impact us personally because that's how we experience them. If you think about imagery, and the contrast even of colors, that, you know, if everything was just uniform in one color, and so often, you know, you want to think everything is bright light. If everything was bright light and there had never been anything else and all we saw was bright light and that was it, just think about what kind of world that would be. I mean, what would we learn from that? And although it's, I think, we've often on this program, this topic comes up often because to me it's the question of the universe. It's basically, you know, why the whys of the very difficult, you know, especially the extreme things that happen on this planet, which can be very, very difficult to integrate and come to terms with. There's no doubt about it. And I think it's very difficult to fully answer that question when you look at, you know, the worst possible things head on. I know many of us have challenges with that, and the only way I can even begin to approach it is that, of course, yes, there has to be a reason. I may not fully understand all the whys of, except, you know, for me, free choice is really important, that's part of the why. When you have free choice, there is darkness and there is light, and they're integrated, and you know, there are contrasts. And their learning experiences and things, but it's still one of the most difficult questions. And I know that many an atheist has been born or agnostic contemplating this very question. So, anyway, I don't want to make this caller wait any longer. I was over in the chat room and I was tweeting also. I'm like the multitasker. I was joking with Rachel before the show that I feel like the wizard in the Wizard of Oz in multiple ways, actually, in that, you know, who's this person behind the curtain, you know, and I have so many different things that I'm watching as the show goes on. And, you know, honestly, I would have it no other way. I could probably get a friend, and if I needed to, there may at times be a show where I bring in a producer if I have a bunch of callers or something. But the funny thing about this show is I love it. I love having all these different things that I'm doing. There's something really satisfying about that, to be able to just do this show and bring the callers on and watch what's going on. So we do have a couple callers, Rachel, so let's bring on some callers. Okay. If you are area code 229... I'm about to bring you on the Frontier Beyond Fear. Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear. If your area code's 229, you're on the show with Rachel Zuzis. Do you have a question for her?
Hi, Susan. Hi, Rachel. Actually, I'm the distressed person in the chat room, and right as I was listening, my computer went down, so I called in because I wanted to hear the answer.
Wow.
I did hear what Rachel said, and I understand, and I guess, you know, there's so many things in life that are bittersweet, and it's just, you know, it's so hard to focus on the sweetness of the bitter. For me, anyways.
Yeah.
And I
think sometimes, and I'm really happy that you called. Thank you for calling. Can you give us your first name?
Yeah, it's Jim.
Okay, yeah, thank you for calling, Jen. You know, I will tell you, my own personal experience with this kind of thing is sometimes you don't see it right at first. I mean, I think when you're in the midst of it, in fact, I think you're doing great, because when you're in the midst of it, that's often when it's the most difficult to see where it's all going to go and how it's going to resolve itself. And over time, you then realize when you look back that, oh, you know, I can see where that took me, whatever the experience is. And it's up to you if you want to go into what you're experiencing right now. Because it's
actually, I wanted to share one little thing about how you said if the world was all light. Instead, I would like to let us examine if that we're all born of divine love and each person has a gift. If we looked at every individual as a person who has a gift, and what we're here for is to understand or share their gift or be amazed by it, that life would be a utopia. It would be complete harmony because we would all be interested not in ourselves. We would be interested in sharing of our gifts and learning of other people's gifts.
Yes. You know, I do, as a, quote, New Ager, we put that term in quotes earlier, and I often do that, too, because the term's thrown around a lot. I honestly call myself a New Ager because I do believe a New Age is dawning and is in our midst. And what that means is there will come a time where we remember the darkness, some of the darker things, and yet we're no longer experiencing that level of darkness on the planet. We would have evolved so that we're not making those choices anymore and our consciousness is higher. I don't think we'll all be light. We'll be multicolored is what we'll be, like a rainbow. And
yeah,
and I see that too. Go ahead.
And Susan, I think it goes to what you mentioned about free choice, that we are here. We have the choice to experience all these different ways of being, and whether that is fully manifesting our divine potential or not, because we have the right, the freedom to not, and to find out what that's like. And so I think there's some of us and some, you know, parts of the world as it is now that is still playing with, well, what does it feel like and what happens if I go this direction? And
yes.
Once I know that, then I'll probably decide I want to go the other way because that's much more pleasurable. And
yes.
And I do think that will continue to evolve. It will move more as a whole towards that.
So how do you use the sacred geometry, or do you use it in the form of numerology? Is that how you use it?
Well, yeah, I do. They're so integrated. It's... you could see the numerology or just looking at the numbers themselves as understanding the energies as principles, or, you know, just their basic essence. And then sacred geometry is one way to look at how they start to express in the world and how they're actually coming into form, literally. But how we interact with them, how they activate and work in their different ways. It does always start with the numbers, as you know, especially the 1 through 9, those single digits, that they represent a spectrum of the basic creative forces. For example, what's the difference between 1 and 2? That 1 is the expression of the oneness, the singular, which can be either the collective all integrated or the one, the single self in this form, and how that being can act out in the world. Whereas 2 is about duality, either, you know, both the principle of it, seeing dark and light and opposites and how they interact, but also the 2, the partnership, how do 2 people or 2 things interact with each other. And those are fundamentally different experiences, the oneness and the duality. And then it builds on from there through the other numbers of, you know, looking at ways of how different flavors to the experiences that we have in the world.
So if you were in a distressful situation, then what number would you look at initially to bring you up from that?
I would probably go back to the one to start
with. To self?
To the self. And well, because the one is the self, but it's also the embodiment of the connection of everything, the oneness of all
mm-hmm.
creation. And the root, everything that where everything started from. The thing about the one and the two is that the two, though they may give the impression that they are different and opposing, and, you know, as Susan said about different colors, like that's where the interest in life comes from, is when we can see the contrast between things and actually notice differences. That makes it more interesting. But
right.
they are, at their root, are the same thing. They're both coming from the same essence. So they're
right.
never actually separate from each other.
So
my
understanding is that I've allowed this to manifest in my life because, you know, of, you know, I'm part of the oneness. And so, and plus it was probably a little bit of my lack of forward vision and, you know, and believing in, you know, goodness of people. So I go from the oneness, and then how does that work into the sacred geometry of moving forward?
Well, one form that emerges from the one, which you can see either as the dot at the center or the circle. And the circle is the dot expanding in all different directions to the same degree. So, you know, the way ripples circle out.
Right.
But from the point at the center, you can draw the spiral that emerges out from the center, and that can continue on and on and on. And that I think, that design, that pattern is about movement forward and slow. It's about continuing on from the point where you are now.
You just stay
and
in
how
the oneness.
That will grow, it'll grow out into something greater, infinitely greater. And you can see how it flows one level to the next, the spiral. And
okay, so instead of getting caught into it and dragged down by it, you stay in the oneness. And by staying in the oneness, you actually are moving forward and creating the spiral.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Okay.
And,
I got it.
You know, one,
okay.
And one, I don't know if you have any, knowledge of labyrinth or experience of labyrinth, but labyrinth is actually based on the spiral. It gets some twists and turns worked into it, but it is one continuous path that is spiraling in and then spiraling out. And it's a really good meditation tool for going inward. You follow the path, which you can't get lost, even though it twists and turns, and you might not know if it's heading in the right direction at times. There's no way to get lost. There's no dead end. It always comes back to the center, and that is a metaphor for our own path into ourselves to find that essence of ourselves and the understanding of something that we may not understand, to get, you know, insight into it, and then to come back out of the center and emerge into the world carrying that knowledge that has been gained. And so that's a really valuable way to process something that has happened and we don't understand. And, you know, I applaud you for having the perspective on it, that it's something to learn from and that you want to grow from it. And so that's a way to do that, to spiral in and then spiral back out, carrying new understanding. from yourself, because it's all right there in yourself. You know why it is that you are where you are and what
right.
you want to learn from it.
Yes, you want to learn so you don't repeat it.
I have
exactly.
a question. Just related to this topic in general. I have, you know, we've all had experiences of loss, whether it be loss of people, which is very dramatic, or even, you know, things, loss of jobs. So many people are dealing with loss. How do we use sacred geometry to help us through loss and our perceptions of loss? You know, have we really lost what we think we've lost? Or I wonder, I think that is kind of a related topic to this, because that creates so much angst for all of us so often on our paths.
Yeah, it does. Sorry, Jim, do you have something you want to
yeah,
say?
Yeah, I feel bad that I'm just want to listen, and you can go on to the next caller. And I just want to listen to the rest of the show, and I appreciate the information. And I did get insight from what you said, and I will try to focus on the bittersweetness and resonate outward in a positive way.
Well, thank you for calling, Jim. And I wanted to tell you, if your computer's still down, you
yes.
can stay on the line if you want. I've had people do that, where you can actually listen to the show on the line, and you're
like
welcome
to
do that.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to do that.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah,
thank you.
Okay, I'll put you off the air now, Jim, but thank you for calling. In a minute here, if I can get it to work. There we go. Okay, we actually lost our next caller, so if that person would like to call back in. Sometimes we get people on their lunch hour listening to this show on Fridays, and they kind of come in and out, because you know how that is. When that's one of the things I think that sometimes I forget, although I don't really forget, but just working at home like I do now and working independently, that it has its positives and it has its challenges too. You know, I do respect that there are people out there who are on their lunch hour. And if you're not able to listen to the whole show, these shows are always archived if you're new to the show or to Blog Talk Radio. And, you know, we actually do feel the energy. As an energetic person, Rachel, I'm sure you feel this way too, is that there is an energy of the listeners listening in the future. I have often felt that with this show, because there is no time. I mean, they're listening to us in the present moment. And so I just kind of want to honor that energy here for a second of those people. We are here with you now in the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, you really did bring up a very important topic that we can branch into here, is the labyrinth. And I'm glad that you did, because I know you mentioned that on your website. I have had some interesting experiences with labyrinths, and I recently read an article in the paper, just independent of my own experience has been, I'm not an expert on labyrinths. You know, I come to spirituality on my own path, where I am very much a learner, and that's the purpose of this show, is that I decided, as I'm learning about things, I am not, compared to a lot of other people in the New Age community, I am relatively new. I haven't been studying this stuff for 20 years like some people. I've been studying other spiritual paths, and I'm able to bring that forward. But a lot of the topics that I know some of my friends in the so-called New Age community are really familiar with, I may not have an in-depth knowledge of, and I'm real honest about that. So I hope that this show, one of its benefits is it can be an avenue of education for everyone, and we can all learn together. But my experience of a labyrinth, and it's something I really would like to explore more, I've had some really weird experiences. I was on Mount Shasta one day, was visiting Mount Shasta for a conference, and I was actually on the mountain, And my significant other, at the time, I had an injured foot. And so we had driven as far up the mountain as we could. And then he went on. He went on climbing the mountain and was out of sight. And so I found myself alone on Mount Shasta, as far as you can drive. And I'm sure there are people listening who know what that point is. You end up, we have a four-wheel drive, and you don't really need a four-wheel drive, but it turns into a dirt road at some point, or rock road. And then eventually you come to the end of the road. So he went and he climbed and was out of sight. And there I was just on the mountain. And it's a very magical place, Mount Shasta. And this was the first time I'd ever been there. And I was just standing there. And all of a sudden I realized there was a labyrinth at my feet. And I didn't know it. Someone had created a labyrinth. I've had friends who say, oh, you stepped into another dimension, and, you know, being the scientist, I don't know what happened. All I know is I didn't see it right at first. So to be intellectually honest, but also spiritually honest, I'll say I really don't know how that thing appeared at my feet, but there it was. Whether I just didn't see it, or who knows, because there are those who say weird things happen on Shasta, and I don't doubt it sometimes. So anyway, I started, since I was by myself, and I could at least walk a little bit, even though I'd injured my foot, I started walking this labyrinth, and people had left crystals along the way. And you know what? What a beautiful thing that no one had taken these crystals. There were beautiful crystals that were on this labyrinth. Now, those of you who think I walked into another dimension, I don't know. All I can say is there were crystals on this labyrinth, and people had left them as gifts, and I felt this tremendous sense of calm. And I don't know, I'm trying to think if before then, this was some years ago, if I'd ever really walked a labyrinth. I've had some experience at a medicine wheel, which is kind of similar. A friend who's a shaman and actually has been on this show in the past, it's been a while, but he's a shaman, and he used to take groups to a medicine wheel, and that was one of my very, very early experiences. And that was kind of like a labyrinth in a way. But anyway, I felt a very powerful energy. And so why don't you speak to labyrinths some more, Rachel, because that is something that touches so many paths. I mean, there are all kinds of spiritual and religious paths in which a labyrinth is accepted. And it is not just a, quote, New Age thing, even though I was never exposed to it in the past. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that, and if you're aware of any labyrinths. I know we do have, we have listeners everywhere, but we do have some listeners that are specifically in Portland, I know that, in Portland, Oregon, where we are now. And I'm wondering if you could talk about any that you know about that are in the area.
Yeah, there are a couple. And for anybody, actually, anywhere, there's, if you Google, like, labyrinth locator or something, actually, there's a link to it on my website from the Sacred Geometry page. There's an article about labyrinths that I wrote. And at the bottom, there's a link to this labyrinth locator. There's a labyrinth society, a national labyrinth society, that actually may be worldwide, that keeps a directory of labyrinths, you know, permanent labyrinths that are available to the public, you know, whether they're at a church or, you know, a community center or someone's home, and they make it available at certain times. So you can look there and see if there is, in fact, a labyrinth somewhere in your area, and most likely there will be. and in Portland, there I know of a couple. There's a couple churches that have them, including here in Northwest Portland at the Episcopal Church on Everett Street. They have a labyrinth that's open, I think, once a month. They have a public labyrinth walk. And in Southeast Portland, there's the Labyrinth House, which is run by Paula Hill Starr, who has built a really beautiful labyrinth, which actually she had specially designed by a guy here in Portland who does labyrinth designs. And they use sacred geometry and created, for a specific purpose, they created a design and installed it in her yard. And she has monthly labyrinth walks. And I think it's just you know, most of the time during the day you can go and walk in on her yard on the labyrinth. So there are lots of them around, and you're right, there's something that is cross cultural, cross tradition, and it's very New Agey now, but it has also a deep connection with Christianity and churches that, you know, one of the most famous being in Chartres Cathedral,
yes,
in France, really, yes, old one, that for a long time in religious traditions, they're found everywhere and all through time. But in more recent time, they've been a strong part of spiritual traditions as a meditative tool, and also as a metaphor for that journey, that path through life. So in Christianity, it's seen as, you know, it can represent, you know, Jesus's path through life, but it's also just our own spiritual path as we go. And, you know, as I said, it's not a maze. It's not meant to confuse or, you know, capture you in dead end. The path twists and turns, and we get that experience of being thrown off from our route and our destination and then taken back around, and we're not sure if we're going to ever get there. But the path is continuous. It will always come to the center, and there's no dead end. And I think that's a really beautiful metaphor for life as we walk through it, and that journey inward into ourselves and then back out again.
It helps us to find the peace in all the aspects of our path, and that you're never really lost. Like you say, you may think you're lost, but
yeah,
you know, when the physical act of walking the labyrinth, I have very limited experience really, but just coming into it as a novice, it's very peaceful. And, you know, I read an article that I found really encouraging to know that this is going on. There's a women's prison, which is actually all the way up to maximum security, southwest of Portland in the southwest suburbs, and they have apparently added a labyrinth to this prison.
Great.
Yes, and it's having a real effect that, you know, people who, you know, people have come down so many different paths to get to that place, I'm sure. And no matter what the severity of that path, or even if they're an agitated individual or whatever, walking the labyrinth is now an option to the people there at the prison. And it's become, they have like regular sessions where you walk the labyrinth, and how it's benefiting the community there. And, you know, one of the things it made me, I was really happy to read that article, in that so often society is so judgmental sometimes that we dismiss the people who are going through that kind of experience, which is no doubt one of the most challenging experiences. And it's been my feeling that anyone who finds themselves in any situation, you know, one thing leads to another for people. And, you know, it's about healing. The whole thing is, it's not about, to me, it shouldn't be about punishment. It should be about healing and rehabilitation. And I was so hopeful to read that this is going on down here.
Yeah, that's very cool. I wanted to speak to your comment about stepping into another dimension or something.
Yes.
And another thing that I have heard about labyrinths is the idea that they're all linked. Every labyrinth anywhere,
wow,
is linked. And so it's the idea that when you step onto a labyrinth again, you step right back to where you were when you stepped off the last one. In that, it builds on itself. And so whether you, like, you believe like that actually energetically they are linked, and so you're stepping back into that space, or just that it's taking you back to that experience again, so you can continue to build on that practice of what does it mean and how do you feel as you walk that path and explore that idea again of the journey through life. So I think that's a beautiful idea.
I had never heard that, and, you know, I am a person who has had some higher spiritual experiences, and in some cases, I wasn't ready for them when they happened, and my own path is, since then, I mean, it changed my life. I mean, some of my higher, I mean, I was kind of jolted awake some years ago is what happened to me after facing a crisis, and but in any case, I have had some of these experiences. And what's interesting about my, and so I am open to these ideas. I mean, I think the scientist in me always wants to question. And yet the funny thing is that I am open. I'm not, because I've seen it. And, you know, even as simple as some of the synchronicities we see, we can have higher experiences just integrated into life. And I see that happening more and more. I had it happen to me last week. I was actually frustrated about something, you know, frustrated about the question that I had talked about earlier about, you know, why is it so dark? And, yeah, I know at an intellectual level it has to do with choice and all this. And right at that moment, as I'm driving, the song comes on with these words, "This is the night of the expanding man." Right then.
Wow.
Could that be expressed more directly? This is the night of the expanding man. And I, you know, when that sort of thing happens, as simple as the right song coming on the radio at the right time, and that happens more and more, you know, it just, I'm just, that's when you get into the wow, the woo-woo factor, as some of my friends like to call it, because it does exist. And I can go look up that song anytime and see that, yeah, it was playing at that time. And see, the scientist in me is very satisfied by that. I could never prove to someone else that, oh, I was thinking about that at that time. But it doesn't matter. It worked for me. And, you know, I have all kinds of weird things happening. Last night, here's another one. I was, in fact, I told this person this had happened. I facilitate events sometimes, and I'm facilitating an event coming up. And I had this huge stack of postcards that I'm labeling. And at a moment in time, I thought about this person who has really great energy and who was at an event recently and saw that this person had registered and was like, oh, great, you know, this person's going to be there. Right in that moment, at that very second, I had 1,000 labels in front of me, 1,000 labels, the very next label, and I had not seen it. They were not in alphabetical order. There was no reason for this whatsoever. Was that person's label at the very moment right after I had thought of them. So, and there was a 1 in 1,000 chance that that would be the next label. And there it was. And so, you know, sometimes it's as simple as that. And, you know, a skeptic, a scientist will say, oh, well, you know, it's just a coincidence. And I've heard so many times people say, oh, when these things come up, it's just people look for patterns and, you know, your brain naturally looks for patterns. And what I like to think about as a mathematician is what is the statistical likelihood of all these things? And when they happen more and more often, it becomes personal proof to me that there is something behind this. It's absolutely statistically impossible. And, you know, sometimes you'll have groups of people that things will occur that you'll witness that are, quote, coincidences. And, you know, you just know that they're not and that they're all part of this integrated, amazing web that we're in. I mean, it becomes so, so amazing when you really start to reflect upon it.
Yeah, and I agree with you that ultimately it's what matters is what it means to you. So that thing may be completely coincidental or have no greater meaning or whatever, but to you it was significant, and it was this lovely moment of, huh, that's so funny that happened, and what are the odds? And
yeah, and
you know,
a teacher of mine,
you know, she often says, I may be completely crazy and I may be completely imagining all this, but I'm having a really good time, so why not?
I love that.
What's wrong with that?
Well, you know, it's sad because so often people, there are those in our society who want to label basically almost any kind of spiritual experience as crazy, you know, and what if we discovered that sanity, as it is labeled, and by the way, sanity is a, I've heard it said sanity is a majority opinion. What if we discover that, and I do believe this, that many of those fringe experiences that we can't categorize in a rationalistic world, one that does not accept the spirit, those things are really when we're the most sane, which is fascinating. Even though some would, you know, a skeptic, if they're very kind, they'll say, oh, you're just seeing patterns where they don't exist. If they're going to be, you know, if they want to try to categorize it in some harmful, which can be a harmful way, that, oh, you know, you better watch that or something, you know. And I hope that there are people, you know, among the listeners out there, if you're having higher experiences and someone's saying, you know, there can be skeptics who will just question everything. And it's really, you know, what is your life like? I know that my life right now is more peaceful than it's ever been. I am not always at peace. I have my moments, no question about that. I'm very honest about that. I was a person in the past who was very high stress individual, and sometimes I still have those moments, and I multitask all the time, but I can't imagine how I could have dealt with some of the things that I've dealt with in my life as that old person I was. So I see that journey on my labyrinth, just how much growth there has been, and yes, I have. There's a path ahead of me too, no doubt about it. And I'm a work in progress, but I can really see how these things have enhanced my existence on the planet. And I love what your friend said, because I think at a point we get tired of thinking about what others think. I have tons of friends who are scientists. Some of them, you know, they are diehard skeptics, and I don't necessarily interact with them all the time, but occasionally, like on my Facebook page, I'll get someone who comments on something I've said that's spiritual, and I think sometimes, oh gosh, you know, they probably all think, poor Susan, she went off the deep end or something, because I'm putting all these spiritual, you know, I've got this spiritual teaching path now. But I am surprised sometimes by what people will comment on, old friends, or someone just says something or likes something I said, you know, and Facebook likes it. And I think, wow, you know, not to say that I have a lack of faith in some of my old acquaintances. I think it's cool that, you know, I'm sure they're evolving too. You know, I probably look back on them and think of them as I knew them long ago, you know, and gosh, if I look back on myself back then, I wouldn't have thought, there is no way in a million years I would have expected I'd be doing what I'm doing now. I there is no way. I can tell you that right now, including doing this show. So our paths really take us to interesting places. I know that we're getting closer to the end of the show, and it does cut off rather abruptly, so I want to give ourselves a chance here to quickly talk to those people in the Portland area. Just to mention that there is an event coming up, the Portland Healing Arts Fair, and it's you can get to it through, it has its own website. I'm sure if you Google that, you can get to it. It's also on Rachel's website. It's Sunday, September 18th, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. I'm going to have a booth there, and I'm going to be doing intuitive coaching, and I'll be speaking at 2:30 there. And I know Rachel is actually the facilitator of this event, so maybe you can quickly tell us what you'll be doing there. And this is just for people in the Portland area. And I welcome anyone. I often have people just come to my tables when I'm at an event, and we just talk. I tend to just talk to people half the time, but I also offer intuitive coaching as well. So anyone is welcome to come by. So Rachel, why don't you talk about real quick what you'll be doing there?
Well, I personally will be very calmly running around, making sure that everything is going as it should be. But what will be happening is about 25 different vendors, different holistic healers and intuitive readers and wellness product providers from the Portland area will all be gathered there, either offering sessions or readings or their products for sale. And so it's a great way to come and learn about all these different resources that are here in the area for healing, the healing arts. And as Susan mentioned, her talk, there'll be workshops happening throughout the day, which are free, and all different speakers about different topics. And the theme of this fair, since it's happening in the autumn, is celebrating the harvest. And so whether physically or metaphorically, you know, we think about this time of year when we're harvesting all that has been grown and cultivated through the summer. That's the food in front of us, but it's also those things that we've been cultivating and creating in ourselves and in our lives during this active time of the year. So it's a celebration of all that being gathered together so we can store it up for the winter. So many of the speakers will be addressing that idea and offering techniques for how to capitalize on that. Speaking of labyrinths, one of the cool things that's going to be there is we're going to set up an indoor labyrinth. I have one on a piece of fabric that can travel and be set up different places.
Great.
So there's an opportunity to walk the labyrinth there. And there'll actually be a couple of vendors who work specifically with labyrinths that'll be there to offer some information about it and orientation into what that's about and how to approach it. So lots of activities like that and opportunities to explore things and some refreshments and just a lot of goodness. And, you know, as you know, we were talking about right at the beginning of the show that just to come and be in that space for a little time, I think is so, it's lovely, it's enjoyable, and I think it's a healing experience in and of itself. Just that collective of people gathered together to create something of beauty and healing and joy in that time and place is a wonderful thing to be a part of, and it's such an honor to be creating that and have all these wonderful people who are responding and want to take part. So I'm really excited about it, and I hope if you're in the area that you get to come check it out.
Yeah, well, I think it's wonderful that you're doing this. I think that we can never have too many get-togethers either. I mean, and there are surprisingly not nearly as many as one would think there would be. You know, that's what I've often thought about it. And I'm just so glad, Rachel, that you're creating this space and how it's so very approachable, because there are some, you know, there are bigger expos out there, and I know, you know, I'm participating in some coming up, and, you know, they are not quite as approachable. And what I love about this event is, and it's something for people to look at in the future, too, because I know we've got people who are speakers and vendors themselves. This is one, it's not that expensive to participate in. It's a great way to start out. I know that on my own path, I'm continuing as I stumble over my words, I'm continuing to develop as a speaker. What an appropriate time to stumble over my words. And so what better way than to participate in these events and to learn from your fellow people who are there? I love the people who show up at different events. I think the synergy is wonderful. So anyway, we are drawing to a close, and so we'll have time to play the closing music to leave everyone with a nice meditative effect. I wanted to thank you, Rachel, for being here, and I do look forward to seeing you at the Healing Fair and also maybe talking to you again on this show in the future. So thank you so much.
It has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me on, and I would be more than happy to come back. another time.
Wonderful, wonderful. All right. Well, everyone have a great week and find peace in your life in the coming week.
Mm-hmm.